At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify without stuttering. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscience meeting. My name's Tim, and I am an alcoholic. I have met all of those requirements. I also attempted to get and stay sober and manage my life for 34 years without the help of AA, and the end result of that was not many Merry Christmases. I came in here because I was out of options. I was told that I was mental defective, beyond human aid, and in full flight from reality. And I wanted to choke the guy who told me that. But I kept coming around, and the truth began to beat me into submission. And you know, I eventually followed some simple suggestions. And today, I'm able to go through things without a drink, including divorce, marriage, death of a parent, birth of a child, changing jobs, joblessness, changing homes, etc. And I'm able to do that today without a drink, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous and a real God in my life. That's my qualification. Thank you. All right. What can I say? Tonight's speaker is a guy who I've been watching and grown to be good friends with over the past couple of years. I used to come in after cutting a bunch of yards and have grass all over me and dirty, and this guy was always squared away, and he reminded me of just the cool breeze every time. And I started to call him Casual Friday Phil because he always looked, you know, shirt tucked in, always crisp. And, you know, the consistency and constancy which is required for sober living, this guy not only exemplifies in his dress, but also in his heart. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Phil.
Hey everyone, I'm Phil, and I'm an alcoholic. If I seem nervous, it's because I am. It's the first time I've done this, so bear with me. Well, my sober date is March 1st, 2009. I actually started coming in these rooms around January 2009. Didn't quite take with me at first. But let me back up. I was born on July 12, 1967, in Dayton, Ohio. Moved around with my parents, ended up in a small town where I grew up until the eighth grade, called Van Wert, Ohio. My family, I have great parents, great family. That's my parents and my sister, who've been very supportive of me throughout my entire life. And I'm truly grateful and lucky to have a family like that. Well, you know, growing up in a small town, you know, I got there in the second grade, had a great life growing up. You know, I can remember, I guess, the first time I drank, was probably 13 years old, best I can remember. Went on a camping trip with some of my neighbors down the street who were older than I was, and we'd gone to get a campsite for our families that were going to come in the next day, and, remember, they bought me a six-pack of beer. I think I finished three of them. And I can remember to this day the feeling that I got from that buzz. And I was hooked. Of course, I didn't become a regular drinker at that point, but that got the ball rolling. People loved to come to my house for parties because growing up, my mom came from a really big family, and they were really tight, and when we were growing up, you know, my uncle had a big house and a pool, and they would have these huge family parties and lots of alcohol, a lot of fun. So I was around it, you know, my whole life growing up. And when I was in the eighth grade, towards the end of my eighth grade year, my dad decided that he wanted to. It was always his dream and his goal to move out to California. So I was told at the, you know, close to the end of my eighth grade year, and my dad had gone out to California a few months to get established and find a house, and we were trying to sell our house in Ohio. And I can remember, I started to fall in with the wrong crowd because I didn't have my dad to keep me in line, and I was getting to be quite a bit bigger than my mom, and wasn't real interested in listening to what she had to say. And I can remember, sneaking out late nights with the wrong people, smoking cigarettes, drinking beer. Made the move. It was the summer before my freshman year of high school, and I always played football, and I got real involved in football, and that kind of kept me on the straight and narrow for the most part. About halfway through that season, I was on a team. We were a really good team, and I was starting, and my dad found a better job in Southern California. And, I can remember when he told me that, I was like, well, good luck down there, because I'm not going. And, after some going back and forth and some issues, they let me stay with some friends of ours and some coaches and some guys I played football with. And once my family was gone, I kind of gravitated towards the wrong crowd, and I started drinking and doing some other things that I shouldn't have been doing. And so another sign, I guess. I finally joined my family a couple months later after the football season was over. And things got pretty good for a while. But I didn't have football immediately. And this is something I kind of had forgotten about until Tim had asked me to speak a couple weeks ago. It's amazing some of the stuff that I've remembered. I remember this sense of feeling I couldn't, I didn't quite fit in. I wanted to talk to the girls, but I never knew what to say or how to say it. And I remembered I would started going to the liquor cabinet before school and filling up a thermos with bourbon or Canadian Club or something like that. And, throughout the course of the day, I would go to my locker and I would drink out of this thermos and then, get that nice feeling, loosen my lips a little bit so I could talk to the girls. And, another sign. Didn't fall too far into it initially. Played football, and then, again, that's something that always kind of kept me out of the lower level, the discipline and the always working out and the team thing and practicing. But once again, my dad decided that I think I was halfway through my junior year, found a better job, but this time it was in Florida. He moved us again, came down here, fell into a real good group of people. Football kept me on the straight and narrow. After the season was done, though, I started levitating again towards the bad crowd, and started hanging out with a couple of people that trouble didn't find them; they found trouble, and I was more than happy to follow along with it. Lots of drinking, a lot of fighting, and not a lot of good stuff. When I was getting ready to graduate, I'd had some opportunities to play football collegiately at small schools, but at the time I was in love with a girl who was going to Florida State. Now, I didn't have quite the grades to go there, but I had some people that were able to pull some strings for me and got me in. Of course, she dumped me 2 weeks after we got there. But I joined a fraternity, and man, things really started going downhill for me, drinking wise. I don't think I lasted two semesters at Florida State, and I failed out miserably. I wasn't going to class, and I was there basically for the party. My parents had enough of that, and they cut me off, and so once again, that was something that kind of made me pull it together and get out of that hole I was getting in. I got a job because I wanted to stay. I had actually gotten back together with that girl. That was a mistake too. ended up going to a community college up there. I'd moved out of the fraternity house, and was able to get decent grades. It's amazing how much more attention I paid to school and taking notes when I was paying for it. Made a huge difference. Got my associate's degree, came back home, didn't know what I wanted to do, except for drinking and chase girls, and got pretty good at that, and ended up getting a job bartending at a country club, and I was in the men's grill. That was one of the best jobs I ever had. But, you know, at the time, it gave me access to alcohol, anytime I wanted. And I worked with a couple of guys, in particular, the guy that was the cook down there was one of us. And we would start drinking beer. He would start drinking beer like 10 o'clock. I'd probably join him around 3 o'clock. And by 7 o'clock, I'd be pretty hammered. And then it was time to go out and do my thing. And, that's when I started experiencing. It wasn't the first time I'd blacked out, but I can remember a specific instance where, I woke up in my parents' kitchen and not remembering how I got there or what had happened the night before. They were out of town. let's see. All right. At that point, my drinking started getting pretty heavy, pretty serious. I got arrested, actually, for the second time. The first one was a fake ID. Open container. Got introduced to this program, but I definitely wasn't ready. Although I had to go for professional help, because the judge was told that I was an alcoholic, and I didn't believe that. I did, whatever I had to do, got out of that. Probably about a year or maybe two later, I got another arrest for open container downtown. Had a full drink, and I think it was New Year's Eve or something. Cop said, "Hey, put that down." And, I tipped it up and drank the rest of what was in the cup. He didn't like that. We had words. So they threw in a resisting arrest without violence and a couple other charges. And, I can remember waking up the next day in jail, very embarrassed. I had to have my parents come bail me out. So once again, introduced to the program. I had to do a 6-month outpatient therapy. I think I was made it sober probably about 2 weeks, because I knew at that point that there was a potential that I had a problem. So after about 2 weeks of that, on the way home from that, I would stop at the bar on the way home, where I would see several other of my inpatient therapy people enjoying drinks as well. Obviously, none of us were getting a whole lot out of the outpatient therapy. And I can remember, too, even after stopping at the bar, stopping at home, or before I got home, and picking up a half pint of Jim Beam, going to my room and finishing that off. And so, finally, I got through college. I did graduate from UCF in 1991. I don't know how, but I did it. And I got a great job as an intern at a law firm. And boy, I'll tell you what, drinking was okay with them. I thought that I had actually died and gone to heaven. They gave me a firm card, carte blanche. As long as I was entertaining clients, they didn't care what I did. And I got pretty good at that. Magic games, predator games, happy hours, which went from 5 o'clock till the bars closed. That whole time, though, I was drinking very heavily. I was always the last person to leave. Getting in trouble, you know, I was lucky because my bosses, they liked me, you know, and anytime I got in trouble, they typically didn't pay attention to it, or in some cases, you know, got me out of it. In one particular event, we used to have we had three offices throughout the state, and we had a bus trip for an open house to our Vero Beach office, and these bus trips, I was in charge of stocking up the bus with beer and alcohol, and we'd fill up these two buses and head on out. Well, this day, well, I think we started at Tangeray's after we had bought all the beer and whatnot and got a head start on everybody. And I remember getting on the bus in Orlando, some of the trip down there, and getting off the bus in Vero Beach. I think the last memory I have of that trip was me walking in the door of the Vero Beach office, and the rest of it is a blur. Well, apparently, on the way back on the bus, at the time I was having relations with two of the female attorneys, and of course they didn't know about each other, other than the fact that they worked together, and I'd asked both of them to come home with me. And, you know, crossing a female is one thing. You cross female attorneys, I'll tell you what. So on the way to my house, I rear-ended one of them. And the other one was right behind us. And so the one in front got out. Of course, the one behind saw her get out. And we were, like, less than half a block from my apartment at the time. And once they started talking, figured out what was going on, they decided to call the police. I got a DUI. I do remember when the police showed up. Spent the night in jail. Once again, my bosses decided, you know, that they sent a couple of guys. They bailed me out, and they agreed to, you know, pay half of my legal costs. You know, and so I got off again, you know, without much consequences other than the 40 hours of community service I had to do at Lou Gardens. So, you know, having got off like that, it didn't slow me down much at all. And, of course, I did some more therapy. And actually, I think that would have been my third introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous is when they had the old house. I can remember coming here for a couple of meetings and the room, all the smoking and whatnot. And you know, I made it, I don't know, maybe a month. I don't know if I made it completely sober, but I was trying. You know, I was trying. But once again, you know, I stopped going to the meetings. And I can remember after my 6 months was up, spending a day just filling out these slips and signing Bob or Jim or whoever and handing in the stack, you know, changed the handwriting and handed the stack papers in to the judge at the end of it. And, you know, that was pretty much it. So continued on the downhill slide, drinking more and more and more. And then, you know, I could tell that I needed to do something. I needed to slow down. So someone approached me about, they were thinking about getting a master's degree in business administration, and they were going to see somebody pitch that. So I thought, well, this could be a good opportunity, you know, to kind of slow me down, because, like I said, I knew I needed to slow down. And, you know, once again, that worked. It was a year and a half, almost 2 years, and it was an executive program, so the classes were one weekend, then we had a weekend off, and then classes again. So my weekends were being taken up by studying, and in between these classes I was doing, you know, I was doing the work, and I worked pretty hard at it. Got pretty decent grades, and you know, kept a, not like I quit drinking by any stretch of the imagination, but it slowed me down dramatically. And the day I graduated, or the day I finished up the program, was going home because we had done it down in Fort Lauderdale, and a friend of mine was having a friend of a friend was having a big party, and so I decided to stop by and see what it was all about. And you know, next thing you know, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I was pretty much the last man standing, and thought it'd be, you know, it was time for me to go home. And I was very, very intoxicated. So it didn't take long for me to get right back to it. You know, it was the day of having finished the program, and I was right back there and pretty much a blackout drunk. Drove home. I made it into my neighborhood, probably about, I'd say, a quarter of a mile from my house, and passed out at the wheel, hit a tree, rolled my truck 1.5 times, was able to climb out of the passenger window because I'd had the windows down. You know, when you're hammered and you're driving one eye, and I had the radio up, the wind blowing in my face and slapping myself, and got that far before I hit that damn tree. And I ran home, and I thought, I've done it now. Just finished this master's program, and rolled my truck. I'm going to get a DUI. Oh God. A good friend of mine's a policeman. I called him, and he said, "Drink a beer and go back down there." Oh, okay. So I didn't have to drink that beer because, you know, I was still pretty hammered. So went back down there, and cops were there. Fire department was there. I'll never forget this. One of the firemen came up to me before I got to the cop. He said, "Just tell the cop that you went home and had a beer, came back." And I did. And the cop asked me what I did. I told him I was a paralegal. And he said, "Well, you know, I can't put you behind the wheel, so, you know, I'm not going to give you a ticket." Wow. You know, got out of another one. No consequences whatsoever. It was a leased truck. I was getting ready to go over the mileage on it. Got it totaled out. They gave me $3,000. Had a down payment for another vehicle. Wow. I mean, you know, scot-free. So not too long after that, I got a new job. The guy I had worked with before, and he had started his own firm, just a one-man law firm. And the first 2 years was great. I mean, business was great. The money was rolling in. And then he started having some personal problems and issues with his wife. And they ended up going through a very, very nasty divorce. He started, you know, he was already a pretty heavy drinker, but he started drinking real heavily. And I was always there, right there with him. And that's when I started drinking, you know, really hard, you know, pretty much straight out of the bottle. He and I would just pass the bottle back and forth. And there was a lot of nights like that, you know, talking about work and how smart we were and how we were going to do this and that and invincible. And, you know, it got to the point where, you know, he would not show up for weeks at a time. I was a paralegal. I was not an attorney. He was the only attorney. And the stress was just phenomenal because we had, at that time, I think about 15 employees, and we counted on him, you know, for pretty much everything. And when he wasn't there, I was the one that was, you know, in the crossfire, and, you know, people looking for him, attorneys, judges, clients. I was really in a hot seat, and very stressful. Didn't slow my drinking down one bit. Got to the point where that's when I started. I was drinking every day. And to top it off, my roommate at the time got a job as a liquor rep. And boy, I'll tell you what, that was I was in heaven, because there was never a shortage of flavored vodka. And that's when I started drinking vodka, my drink of choice towards the end. And that's when I started blacking out, you know, fairly regularly. It wasn't every night, but it was starting to become a regular thing, constant. You know, I had a motorcycle at the time. I would go out. I'd ride that motorcycle to bars. And that's the only places I seemed to want to go, regardless of where my friends wanted to go or what they wanted to do. We always had to stop for me at a bar. where I would indulge myself. And I can't tell you how many times I rode that motorcycle in a blackout drunk, and would wake up in the morning wondering how I got home, if my motorcycle was even there. You know, that makes me look back and lets me know that, you know, God had to have been with me, because otherwise there's no doubt in my mind that I'd be dead today. So, you know, as this thing progressed, and it did progress, the guy that I'd been working for, with the alcoholism, he started getting paranoid, and he started showing back up here and there, and he became really intensely jealous of me, because the people that we worked with were, in his mind, and maybe there was some truth to it, but they were loyal to me, and they weren't as much to him. And he had a big problem with that. And you know, my thing was I was just trying to, help him stay afloat and doing everything I could, and thought I was doing the right thing. And so we started butting heads, and the boss from my firm where I had started, they were in kind of a jam, and he called me and wanted me to come back and help them out. And so I went back to them, to a great, got very lucky, a great job, making pretty much the same money that I had been making before. But the drinking didn't slow down at all. And at this point, I was a daily blackout drinker, without exception. And I can remember when I had a diverticulitis real bad, and it had been messing with me for a few years. And I was told I had to get surgery on it. It had become very serious. And I thought, okay. And I knew I was going to be in the hospital for a week. And I thought, this is my chance to get sober. I'll be on all kinds of medication, so I should be okay. And when I get out, I'm not going to drink anymore. Of course, I wasn't telling my doctors that I was drinking half a gallon of vodka a day. And so I went into the hospital, and yeah, I was drugged up all right, but that didn't stop me from having the DTs. And I can remember waking up one night and pulling the IVs out of my arms and just, having a real bad hallucinations. They just thought it was a drug interaction. I still didn't, tell them what was going on as far as my drinking, that had stopped abruptly. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have done surgery on me. They probably would have sent me to treatment. So I got out. I hadn't had a drink in a week. And I still had some medications. And the day I got home, and now I had been cut pretty much from stern down to below my belt line, and could barely walk. 25 feet, I think I made it before they let me out of the hospital. I found a way to get both, but my parents had to stay with me for a week because I couldn't really do anything. And I found a way, I can't remember exactly how, but I got both of them out of the house, put some sweatpants on, went to the liquor store, and bought enough vodka to last me through that week, which was probably 2 gallons. And from then on, it was back to the races. It was just like I'd never stopped, blacking out even while they were there, and it got bad. I was the kind of guy, I would carry around 2 water bottles, one filled with vodka, the other filled with water. And I knew which one had vodka in it just by the way it sounded in the bottle. I mean, or the way it felt in the bottle. Again, it just progressed where on the weekends, it got to the point where I was starting to drink earlier and earlier and earlier, and couldn't do anything, wouldn't do anything without, having a buzz, a significant buzz. I went from going out and having fun with my friends to nobody really wanted to have anything to do with me, because when I did go out with them, I wanted to have the buzz before we got to the bar. And so by the time I got picked up and taken to the bar, I would be pretty much hammered. and I'd have one or two beers at the bar and be falling down drunk. And my friends couldn't figure it out. They're like, you know, you've had two beers. What, you know, what's going on here? And it got to the point where by 10 o'clock, you know, they'd be picking me up off the ground and they'd have to take me home. Then they'd go back out. So, that, you know, that got kind of old for them. And, you know, it wasn't too long before they quit calling me. But that was okay with me. At that point, you know, all I wanted to do was sit home in my recliner and drink myself into oblivion. You know, what happened was I'd been going along that way for quite a while. And it was, I can remember my my neighbor, who I considered the neighborhood drunk, came up to me and told me that he was worried about my drinking. And I was like, oh, I've got a problem. It was the day before a Christmas party at work, and I went to my boss at the time to, you know, thank him and tell him, you know, let him know what a great job I was doing, or I thought I was doing. And he let me know in no uncertain terms that I wasn't doing a great job, and that he wanted me to start trying to find work from other attorneys in the office, not just a couple of them, but all of them. And he wanted me to have a list of everybody I talked to make sure that I was trying to get work from other people, because he really didn't want to have much to do with me anymore either. And I'll tell you, at that point, things were really bad. You know, I was just walking from my car to my office. You know, I'd have to cross the street, and I was going dark. It was like I had blinders on. I knew I was in big trouble. I could not stop. I had major health problems, high blood pressure. I was obese. I was throwing up at night, not knowing. You know, I'd wake up, and you know, it was just like I said, it was a bad situation. I felt like the lights were going out, you know, both mentally and physically. So after this Christmas party is, you know, I'd been on benders before, but I started drinking morning, noon, night. You know, I'd wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and drink a, you know, I say shot of vodka. It was more like a glass that full. And I can remember my parents came over for the holidays, and my mom looked around, and she looked at me and she goes, "You really have given up." And that really, you know, kind of the lights went on briefly. So after the Christmas holidays, I was drinking so much. I was supposed to be back at work. I wasn't going to work. I knew I was in trouble. Started making some phone calls, did internet research, try to find that pill I could take to make me all better, not want to drink, and make me a better person. Of course, that pill does not exist. After calling around, you know, and I'd been introduced to the 12 steps. I didn't want to have anything to do with the 12 steps. I was trying to find programs that offered something different. And, you know, I finally ran into a lady who was an alcoholic herself. She worked for one of these facilities, and she basically 12-stepped me over the phone. And she didn't care if I went to their facility. She made it clear to me that, you know, I needed to get help somewhere. And, you know, so after a couple of days, I called her back. She ended up, it was right after New Year's, and I'd called her on New Year's Day. She'd give me her cell phone number, you know. I mean, and this is someone I still call every couple of months and let her know how I'm doing. Just a great lady. But she got me into a detox because there was just no way I could have detoxed myself. I mean, drinking as much as I was. I can remember measuring that half-gallon bottle into thirds and waking up in the morning and, you know, being more, you know, towards the end it was, you know, almost three-quarters of that bottle. So I got into this detox, went to this treatment center, and boy, was I pissed off. I was just really, really angry. I was known as the angry guy of the, you know, 30 people that were in this program. I was known, you know, I didn't want to hear what any of you had to say. It was all about me, you know, and I didn't pay this money to come listen to you. You listen to me. And it went like that for a couple of weeks, you know. I knew I was powerless, you know, because my life had become definitely unmanageable. You know, and this program was based on the first three steps. So I had the first one. I understood that. When they started talking about power greater than ourselves, I was like, whoa, no. I'm the one that got me into this. I'm the one that's going to get me out of this. So I fought that. And what happened was is they would take us to these AA meetings, you know, in the van. We have people that come here from the facilities as well. And I met a guy, because they were always stressing to get a temporary sponsor. And I asked a guy to be my temporary sponsor. And he started to explain things to me and to where I could understand. Because I was reading a book and going through the motions and, you know, thinking I knew everything. And he started explaining some of this stuff to me. He taught me how to pray, you know. Because before that, I only prayed for what I wanted or when I was in a bind, you know, God, please get me out of this, I'll do that. And of course, I never lived up to my end of the bargain. So I decided to do what he said, started getting on my knees to pray. Of course, I didn't want to do that at first either. But when I started doing that and started to turn my will over, things started getting better for me. It's probably about the third week in, and it was a noticeable difference. And I started relying on that serenity prayer throughout the day at this treatment center. And whenever somebody made me angry or said something I didn't like, I used the serenity prayer. And people started to notice that, not only my peers in the group, but, you know, the counselors and the people that ran the program. And they started letting me do things that they weren't letting other people do. This. They would let me go to AA meetings with this guy. They would let me meet at his house. We'd go over the big book, and the lights really started going on for me. So I got out of that treatment program, and I did what they said, found a meeting, I was still fighting that terminal uniqueness that we all go through, and I was picking and choosing out of the steps and the suggestions that I was getting out of the rooms, because I didn't need all of that stuff. I only needed some of it. Because, I was me. And I made it 26 days and went out, and I was doing exactly what people told me I shouldn't be doing. I was hanging out at bars, and, you know, I got cocky, and everything they, you know, were telling me not to do. And so I drank, and it wasn't just a couple of, it wasn't a gentleman drink, it was a blackout drunk. And woke up the next morning, and I was scared. You know, I was like, God, I do not want to go back to this. And, you know, by the grace of God, I came back to Central and went in. And I wasn't sure if I was going to, but I admitted what I had done. And it was amazing the outpouring of support that I got from the people in that room. Because up to that point, I hadn't been sharing a lot. You know, I'd been told really not to say a lot, so nobody really knew much about me. And it was just amazing that the support that I got and the numbers I got, and, you know, the people that, you know, that they really cared about me. You know, and so that's when I decided, you know, I got a sponsor, and that's when I decided to give myself to give myself entirely to this program. And I got a sponsor, and I started working those steps to the best of my ability, when I did my fifth step, I'll tell you, it was just like, wow, it was like the world had been lifted off my shoulders. You know, I was able to tell this guy some things that I thought I was going to take to the grave with me, and he was like, you know, that's it. I mean, are you sure there's not more? You know, because I was real nervous about it, and you know, so that was a huge step for me. And then, I did what he said and went home and prayed, and then I did my ninth step, and boy, that was even a bigger relief to me. You know, something I was really nervous about doing, but once I did it and started making those amends, boy, my life got even better. And eventually that obsession to drink left me. I don't know exactly when it was, but it left me. And today I've been given a new life because of this program. We talk a lot about this program, and something that's always sticks with me is, you know, this is kind of like a three-legged stool. There's the program and the steps, the fellowship, and God. And with that, you know, like I said, I've been given a solution today. Those problems that I thought were problems before aren't really problems today. You know, and when I do have a problem today, you know, what I do is I step up my meeting attendance. I talk to other alcoholics, and I pray. And I pray every day, morning and night. And I pray throughout the day. When things are starting to get to me, I'll shut my door and stop and ask God to take them away. And it's amazing the relief that I get from that. Truly amazing. But here, you know, the thing is, and I can remember coming in early on, you guys always talking about this work. What's this work they're talking about? I had no idea what they were talking, you know, what you guys were talking about. You know, I come to meetings, you know. I do what I feel is the right thing. You know, what's this work? Well, today, you know, I understand the work has to do with, you know, changing the way I think, changing the way I react, you know, and changing the way I treat people. You know, I still, even though I've asked God to take away these defects of character, I'm still pretty damn defective. And I have to work on that stuff every day. Every day. But at least, you know, I know when I'm doing it. It's just a matter of stopping myself from doing it. Sometimes it's quicker. Sometimes it's not so quick. And when I, you know, if I don't address it immediately, I can be a miserable SOB, you know. And I just got to be reminded, which is why I come to, you know, I come to six or seven meetings a week, you know, because I have to be constantly reminded. I get up, I pray in the morning, and I start to leak, you know, and that spirituality, you know, things start getting to me at work, and I start, you know, getting in that funk. And I come here at noon, and I get refilled, you know, and that general will get me through the rest of the day. If I need to come to a meeting at night, I come to a meeting at night. Otherwise, I've got a phone number, a phone full of phone numbers of people I can call whenever there's something bothering me, and get it out. And it's amazing, you know. Again, the relief that I can get from that. You know, because of this this program, I told you about that Christmas party where I got dressed down by this guy that kind of sent me, you know, which probably the best thing that happened to me because it, you know, it started me on the direction of getting sober. That same guy, we had a 10-year, one of the girls I work with, was her 10-year anniversary, which is a big deal at the firm I work for. And everybody gets, you know, comes together, and this is a big firm, I'm probably talking over 100 people. And he says something, you know, that the boss will say something about the assistant or whatever. And he singled me out as being someone that he trusts implicitly with his work and with his clients. You know, having gone from what he said to me 2 years ago to having hear him say that in front of pretty much the whole firm a few days ago was an amazing feeling. You know, I was just was very nice to hear because of where I was and where I'm at today, and I owe that entirely to the grace of God and to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I just can't say enough for what this program and the people in this program have done for me. I've been so blessed to have found this place in Central, I think in particular. And the people I've met here have changed my life. You know, I'm not perfect, but I'm a hell of a lot better. You know, life is life today, and I can deal with life on life's terms without having to take a drink. That's amazing for a guy that drank like I did. So, you know, if you're new, I can't stress enough the importance of 90 meetings in 90 days. I can remember right before I got out of rehab, that someone told me that. I said, "What, are you kidding me? 90 meetings in 90 days? Are you kidding me?" But you know, once I did that, you know, again, the light started coming on. I started to get a little understanding of what goes on, or what's on that wall, and what's in the book. You know, and get a sponsor. I can't tell you how important getting a sponsor is. You know, I tried to do this on my own for a while, and I just told you where it got me. You know, and keep coming back. You know, the miracle will happen. You know, this program works if you work it. So, anyways, with that, I know we're getting late. I apologize. I just wanted to read something real quick. This is from the Daily Reflections, and this just struck me like a, you know, right between the eyes this morning. All the prayer and meditation in the world will not help me unless they are accompanied by action. Practicing the principles in all my affairs shows me the care that God takes in all parts of my life. God appears in my world when I move aside and allow Him to step into it. So, thank you.